Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. As we head through this Independence Day weekend with a lot of summer left, we want to help ensure folks, and especially kids in Connecticut, are as safe as they can be out there. You know, each year about 1,500 pedestrians and 550 cyclists are hit by cars on Connecticut roads, leading to serious injuries and, sadly, fatalities. So we're going to bring on a representative from Watch For Me CT, a statewide campaign aimed at reducing those numbers through awareness, education, and enforcement, to discuss their work and how it can benefit your community. Then we're going to welcome back Energize CT and the Director of Energy Efficiency for Eversource to talk about a couple of different programs to help educate kids on how to live in a more sustainable world and how to enlist entire communities in helping conserve energy resources. And we'll close with a special projects coordinator from the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, which just published a first-of-its-kind guidebook to help town and city leaders and police agencies better respond to racial tensions in their communities. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder from Stanford Museum and Nature Center. This organization is presenting an all-new lineup of special events and intergenerational programs for the summer, including drive-in movie nights. Revel in the nostalgia of decades past at the Flashback Drive-In Series, which includes retro movies and live music performances on select Fridays this summer. The family-friendly movie component of the series includes The Parent Trap on July 8th with live animal meet and greets before the show. The Goonies on July 29th with Hesker Farms Scavenger Hunt until showtime. And Back to the Future on August 12th featuring retro giveaways and an ice cream social. If you'd like tickets, just go to stanfordmuseum.org/drive-in. Shockingly, I can't believe the statistic that I'm reading here from our friends at Connecticut Children's and Watch For Me CT, but right here in our state, more than 1,500 pedestrians and 550 bicyclists are hit by drivers in motor vehicles every year, 2,000 plus people. And sadly, many of those people are young, if not children. And so we're here today to talk about this important Watch For Me CT program with the program specialist from Connecticut Children's, Amy Watkins, who works in their Injury Prevention Center. So, Amy, thanks for joining us. Now, when we talk about those numbers, this is not strictly limited to children. This is generally the entire population that's being affected, right?
Absolutely. This is all ages, all parts of our state, all different types of people doing various activities, absolutely not confined to children at all. In fact, our older population, people 55 and older, are bearing the brunt of many of these crashes, are turning fatal for many of them, even though it, you know, does not represent the number of deaths that happen to people in those age groups as a result of vehicle crashes is not proportionate to the number of people in our population. So it's a disproportionate burden on our aging population.
Now, are you getting the idea more from the 5,000-foot level and in the position that you're in there at the Injury Prevention Center, that these situations are happening in such huge numbers more because pedestrians are either not as schooled or as attentive as they should be to their own safety? Or are you getting more of the idea that it's because drivers are just so much more distracted or are not not just distracted, but, you know, mm-hmm. not giving the legal right of way when it is required to pedestrians and cyclists?
Yeah, well, certainly everybody has a role in their own safety, but the responsibility really comes down to the people behind the multi-ton vehicles. You know, we've had a culture up to this point that is starting to change where the roads are for cars only and getting drivers from A to B as fast as possible, and that is changing into a more complete streets sort of mindset, which is there are many reasons that people are on the road. People are out for recreation. They're getting to and from work on foot or on bike. There are, you know, some of our cities where people don't even own cars, and people are walking and biking for a variety of reasons. And our cars are getting bigger and more with more bells and whistles inside to distract you. We have cell phones. The cars go quickly. People are speeding. And what we're having is just people are not looking out for one another on the road. You know, with the rise in SUVs, the pedestrian fatalities, the crashes are more likely to be fatal because of the design of the front of the car and the way that it would impact a person who's out of the car. So while we have made some strides with technology inside a car to protect passengers when there's a crash, we have not made the same technological advancements to protect the people outside of cars. So we don't have the collapsible bumpers, and we don't have as much as many indicators that there's people around it, and other things that we could put into cars to make it a little bit safer for people outside of cars.
Yeah, I think the other thing that is very, very concerning to me, and I have to believe it is to you as well, is that over the past 10 to 15 years, Connecticut has been working so hard and successfully across all of its 169 communities, rural, suburban, and urban, to try to create more pathways for pedestrians and cyclists, which naturally tend to occur alongside established roadways. So, you know, right when you have Connecticut urging more people to get out and municipalities, the state and the federal government supplying more underwriting for sidewalks and other ways for people to get out of their vehicles, you've got more people, you know, out of vehicles on the roadway.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is a great path to head down, you know, being walking and biking. These things are healthy. They're good for the environment. Sometimes people do them out of necessity. And what we find is that making the road safer for all people or for bikes and pedestrians makes the road safer for all people. So when you create a calmer street with street lights and amenities and trees and things, they tend to slow cars down. They tend to save the lives of everybody on that street, not just the people outside of cars. So we want people to get out there and feel that they are safe in using their roads, whether they're walking or they're biking. And what we know is that calming streets and slowing drivers down and making it safe for bikes and peds makes streets safer for everybody.
So Watch for Me CT is a partnership between the Connecticut Department of Transportation's Highway Safety Office and your employer there at Connecticut Children's and the Injury Prevention Center. Tell us a little bit about the ramp up and launch of Watch for Me CT.
Oh, sure. The program was adopted in 2017, and that was after a one-week period in December 2016 where there were 9 serious crashes that involved pedestrians, and it resulted in 8 fatalities. So 8 pedestrians died in 1 week in December 2016. And the DOT really took notice of that and said, this is a real problem. It's not just here. It's across the whole country. These are the trends. These are the statistics, and we need to do something in our state. And the DOT has had a history of partnering with Connecticut Children's on road safety for teens and children for a long time. So they contacted us and said, would you be willing to take on a pedestrian and bicyclist safety program that targets all ages and across the state? And, you know, let's see what we can get going here. So I came on board in 2018, and and since we have launched a media campaign, and we also do a lot of outreach and in getting out into the communities and talking with people about why this is important and helping communities make changes to their streetscapes so that it's safer.
So it sounds like you not only come out and speak with school age communities or things like scouts and civic and neighborhood groups, but you also play a role in talking with public safety and public works and road and highway professionals.
Absolutely. Yeah, we many of the enforcement folks and the engineering folks, they know a lot of this stuff, but we are there to, encourage that, that mindset of roads are for everyone and to help them communicate their changes. So when an engineering planning department is going to make some changes to the street, how do we communicate that to the public so they understand how a road diet actually can benefit them or how a roundabout is actually safer? Because many people don't know what the research is and what the statistics are, and people don't like change. And so one of the things we're able to do is to work with planners and other folks to help communicate to the public why these changes are happening and how it's actually beneficial to the people who live in the area.
Speaking of which, when we're looking across this landscape of an average of 1,500 pedestrians and 550 bicyclists hit by drivers every year, and way too many of them losing their lives or becoming, permanently affected by their injuries, there is such a kind of predominance of these incidents happening in among communities who can least afford it. Individuals in urban and low-income areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we have these big, wide roads and major arterials that run through neighborhoods in cities, where people are walking for a variety of reasons. Again, there's some cities have lower car ownership. People are going to their bodegas or their work or to see family members or walking to school. Many of our children walk to school.
Yep.
So a lot of people are out there moving around in the cities on foot and on bike and on scooter. And yet we have these arterials that, like something like Albany Avenue, where it's quite easy to get your speed up pretty fast, and speed is deadly. It's one of the biggest contributors to fatalities. And people also may choose to run red lights, and blow through stop signs, and do other things that create a more dangerous situation. And so, yeah, we have people who live in some of our disenfranchised or neighborhoods where they could, they need to be using their streets for practical reasons in addition to recreation, and their streets are not safe. People are driving through them like they're on the highway.
Well, Amy, I have to give you and Watch For Me Connecticut a lot of credit, because you're not only mounting safety programs that are speaking to potentially all members, whether they be the ones who are more predominantly victims, as well as those who are involved in the building and the engineering of our roads, but also in terms of safety programs, you guys have done a fantastic work in initiating more of peer-to-peer type situations where, if you get a police officer out there or a public safety official or an older adult trying to convey safety messages to teenagers or younger children, that message may not be as effective as if they're hearing it from someone in their own neighborhood or someone who looks like them or looks like they're around their age. So here you go with the Connecticut Yard Goats Young Ambassadors Program. And I understand if they have not already, they are putting together a series of workshops and safety training initiatives in the greater Hartford area.
Yes, yeah. So we were very lucky to be able, with the support of the Connecticut DOT and the Governor's Highway Safety Association, receive some funds to partner with the Hartford Yard Goats Young Ambassador Program, which is through the Hartford Yard Goats Foundation. And they have a select group of teenagers who are engaged and interested in contributing to their community. And one of their projects this summer, working with us, was to learn about bicycle and pedestrian safety and then be able to take that to other youth in Hartford and explain, like you said, peer-to-peer, someone around my age, like, this is what we need to know and this is what we need to do. And in addition, we are able to distribute helmets and bike lights and safety gear that can really help people who are out there who may have a bike and they don't have the proper lights or they don't have a helmet. So we wanted to bring that peer-to-peer education along with safety materials to kids in Hartford. And we have a number of events that have taken place and some that are still planned throughout the summer, including participating in Domingo, which is the Hartford Open Streets thing that is starting sure. in June and going once a month through August. Mm-hmm. So we'll be there, and we're so excited to work with these awesome youth who are so passionate and get them to help spread this word to other youth about it's cool to be safe. You know, everyone wants to live, sure. you know, to see, you know, graduating from high school and going on with their lives, and we don't want anybody to be taken too soon because of, you know, our incidents on our roads.
Right. Well, if folks want more information about your organization, they can go to watchformect.org. And in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Amy, here we are playing this program on July 3rd. And I know in my neighborhood, really the fireworks started around Memorial Day. But here we are on probably the busiest weekend of the year in terms of folks who are lighting some sort of fireworks or other pyro devices. So I wanted to leave the last couple minutes for you to speak directly to folks who might be listening, who are, you know, have that big box of fireworks tucked away for this evening and tomorrow evening on the 4th, and just remind them about what they need to know to be as safe as possible.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great reminder. Fireworks, they're beautiful. They can be very dangerous. Children should never be using them. Even sparklers can get very, very hot. It can scald, burn a child. It can burn clothing. So children should not be using any fireworks or, you know, if it's something simple like a sparkler, make sure there's close parental guidance and watching and making sure that nobody's getting hurt. And absolutely, that you have to use things as directed and be very careful. They can malfunction. There are a lot of terrible, devastating hand injuries that can render someone's hand completely useless, sure. lose fingers. You can very other really terrible things that we don't want to have happen. So it's best, if you can, to go watch a professional fireworks display. But if you must let them off in your yard, you know, make sure to use all the cautions that are laid out in those things, because it can be dangerous. And this is also a time of year where people are celebrating and they're drinking. So, you know, don't use fireworks when you're impaired, and don't drive when you're impaired. That's, you know, we have a huge problem with impaired driving crashes in our state. And, you know, these are really fun times. The summer is a great time for having a drink outside, but, you know, use designated drivers, use public transit, use rideshare and Uber services. You know, think ahead about impairment, and not only for your life, but for the lives of everybody else on the road.
We want people to get to know Connecticut Children's for its prevention programs like Watch for Me CT. It is good to know that you also employ hundreds of incredible professional medical and medical support personnel in the event of the worst outcomes of accidents, incidents, fireworks, fireworks and other motor vehicle crashes. But we want folks to get to know you guys for preventing these from happening. And you did a great job in helping to make sure that was the case for this 4th of July weekend and all summer long. Amy Watkins is a program specialist with Watch for Me CT and an injury prevention center specialist at Connecticut Children's. WatchForMeCT.org is their website. Stay safe this summer. And Amy, thank you for all this great information. Well, here we are. We're starting to feel the heat of summer, and that makes us think about doing everything that we can to maximize energy savings. And man, have I got the person that's going to help us learn more about that. Ron Arujo is with us. He is Eversource's Director of Energy Efficiency. And today we're going to be talking about a couple of very important initiatives that Energize CT is initiating here in Connecticut. The first is a brand new educational program that's called the Energy in Action Mobile Exhibit. Ron, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us. Happy summer. This is sounds like a fantastic and fun way to roll the educational component of what we're trying to teach our youngest citizens about in terms of maintaining a more sustainable world, right?
Yes, and thank you, John, for having me on the program. Yes, I mean, this is a great way to reach young children who are our future energy decision makers. And this Energy in Action Mobile Exhibit is a traveling educational experience where, you know, anyone, even folks other than children, essentially as older children, can learn about energy efficiency and how to make smart energy saving decisions in their daily life.
So what is the experience that our young visitors are going to have, and how do you plan to roll this out? Where will the mobile exhibit be seen?
Sure. The mobile exhibit, we concentrate on bringing the mobile exhibit to community events such as fairs, things of that nature, and also in schools when school is in session. We're planning on doing around 80 visits and split roughly evenly between schools and community events. And you know, as far as the engagement is concerned, the mobile exhibit contains about 10 exhibits, and they're very interactive to try to make sure that we maintain the attention of the children going through. And so there's some that are really cool, such as like a plasma tube that if you put your hand on it, you can see how the electricity kind of follows it around. There's a thermal energy camera in one of the exhibits that shows the heat coming from the child's body or the person's body who's ever going through it. And then there's some other interactive items such as a Plinko board that shows what happens should you follow the path of generation from a fossil fuel generator to being delivered to the home versus, let's say, getting solar power from your home delivered right to the home and what happens there. And then there's also a one of my favorites is a bicycle outside which has a little generator attached to it when you pedal, and you get to see how easy it is to pedal the bike to light up the LED light versus the incandescent light, which takes a considerable amount more effort.
And this is going to be reaching thousands of different influencers every year. I mean, this is not a short-lived project here. You guys are in this for the long haul. You want to be doing this for several years, right?
That's correct. This item was part of our three-year energy efficiency plan that we filed with the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, and we hope to attract approximately 18,000 visitors from all the events we do each year. And so we fully have this mobile exhibit in our plan for not only 2022 but 2023 as well as 2024.
And I guess some of the older young people that come and visit this display may remember some of these exhibits from permanent fixtures up in North Haven, right?
Yes. In North Haven, we used to have an Energized Connecticut Center, and it was a spot where we would bring in school groups and other community groups to walk through, and they would see exhibits there. We've since retired that center, but what we did is we looked at the exhibits that were popular there and, if you will, refreshed them or made them a little bit better and more exciting and put them in this mobile exhibit. And the advantage is that now, rather than having a location where people would need to come to, we could actually go to the schools, and with the thought being that we're going to be able to reach many more schools and many more communities because they won't have to drive all the way down to North Haven in order to get the same experience.
So now that the mobile exhibit is on the road, you've already been in front of dozens of different school communities.
That's correct. We launched this late in March of this year, and we've already traveled to 36 different schools or events, and we've reached over 4,400 students and more than 6,700 community members thus far.
So how does a school or community group go about getting in line to have a visit from the mobile exhibit?
Yes, there's a website that's available. It's called energizect.com, energizect.com. And on that site, you can just look for energy in action. And on there, there's a place where a community or a school could actually register and reserve a spot for that particular mobile exhibit.
And
we are booked out through November so far. So if someone is listening and interested, it would be wise to do it soon and take advantage of any open spaces that we have in the calendar.
And I imagine you expect to not really be able to do this with any great regularity over the course of the kind of deep winter months, right?
Well, I mean, I think in the winter months, you start running into uncertainty due to, snow days and things of that nature. But the idea would be is that if we can fully utilize it throughout the year, we would still try to get the mobile exhibit to any type of school or community that's having an event during that time frame and make sure it's put to full use.
Awesome. And when the exhibit rolls away to its next location, what are some of the things you hope it will impress upon the many dozens or hundreds of students who have just experienced it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I tend to look at things in threes, and I think the top three things that I like people to walk away from this going through this exhibit is, one, understanding, ways to what conserving energy means. Understanding that there are alternative energy sources, particularly renewable energy sources such as solar, and then also have the students or whoever went through the exhibit transfer that knowledge from their experience to actually action that they implement in the home. And that could be from just a child who went through and recognizing that they're going to be more conscious about switching off the lights in the home or turning the air conditioner off if they're not, if they're going to be leaving the home, or perhaps taking advantage of one of our many energy efficiency programs and receiving actual services or rebates for equipment that they buy to make their home more efficient.
All right. Folks, we're talking with Ron Arujo, who is the Eversource Director of Energy Efficiency, about this Energy in Action Mobile exhibit. Once again, if you'd like to find out more, you can go to energict.com/energyinaction. We're going to take a quick break. We got about 5 or 6 more minutes to come back and talk to Ron about how EnergyICT and Eversource are not only trying to educate and impress the youngest members of our community, but entire communities. So stick around for the second half of our conversation. We'll be right back. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, if you want to run for a good cause, the 24th annual Ian James Iacarino Memorial 9-Mile is coming up at 8 a.m. on Saturday, August 7th at Calf Pasture Beach in Norwalk. The race is dedicated to Ian, who passed away after an accidental heroin and prescription drug overdose. Last year, 175 runners participated in this extraordinary community race, demonstrating a commitment to a healthy, drug-free lifestyle. Not much of a runner, but still want to be part of the fun and cultivate change? Become a sponsor or volunteer at the event. If you'd like more information, volunteer opportunities, or to learn more about the Courage to Speak Foundation and how they might be able to help you, your school, or your community, visit CourageToSpeak.org. Well, we're back with Ron Arujo. He is the Eversource Director of Energy Efficiency, and we are going to switch gears and talk a little bit about this new community partnership initiative. So, Ron, let's talk a little bit more about that. This is a real community partnership issue.
Yes, it's what we're calling our Community Partnership Initiative. And this partnership is a grant-based program that supports community-based organizations and municipalities throughout Connecticut and helps them educate residences and businesses on available energy efficiency programs and offerings. Right now, we're in the process of working with our round one applicants. We have project teams from several cities or towns across Connecticut that have begun their energy efficiency outreach campaigns, and they're slated to run through the end of this calendar year.
And most of these communities are right here in our radio station's listening area: Bethel, Brantford, Hamden, Waterbury, West Hartford, Wilton, and even the folks that might be listening to one of our stations way out in New London. They're all going to benefit from this program. How did you select these towns to be part of this round one partnership?
What we did is late last year, we ran an application process where we publicized through the energizect.com website, as well as other mechanisms, to ask for applications for any interested community organization or municipality. And we received applications. And what we did is we reevaluated them, and each of these applicants had to select a goal that they would try to support. And some of those goals were things such as supporting our home energy solutions program and increasing participation in that program within their community by 10% over what normally takes place, and something similar for our income eligible program that we offer. And then, as well as some communities also selected our small business program in trying to increase participation in that program as well.
So what's going on in my hometown of Waterbury?
Well, in Waterbury, we have a group of organizations, including Clean Water Action, the Connecticut Energy Network, Neighborhood Housing Services of New Haven in Waterbury, as well as the Naugatuck Valley Project and I Heart My Home. They're all working together to increase participation in the residential program we call Home Energy Solutions. And that's a weatherization program where for a $50 fee, what happens is that customers will receive the direct installation of weatherization services to make their home more efficient and comfortable, and then also gives them access to rebates to do even additional work, such as maybe adding more insulation or energy-efficient windows or a new heating system.
And so that's a sounds like a major project involving a number of different agencies. But what do you do in like smaller communities that are just kind of maybe doing some a little bit of internal initiative?
Yeah, well, like another community, just to give a different type of an example, is the town of Brantford, and it has a clean energy ad hoc committee, and we're running an outreach campaign with them to increase participation in the Small Business Energy Advantage Program. And again, that's a small business program where we have qualified contractors that will go out and assess the energy efficiency opportunities within that small business, and then go ahead and make a proposal to the business owner to improve the efficiency of there, and we end up providing an incentive that helps defray the cost of that. And many of these businesses may qualify for a 0% loan to finance their portion of the investment.
Well, in the last minute or so that we have with you, Ron, what can the communities who are hearing about this now that are not involved, how can they maybe get their foot in the door for round two?
Okay, round two is something that we're presently working on, and we're going to want to be, you know, connecting with anyone who's interested. And what I would suggest is that they look at the information on the energizect.com site. They can find it under the Your Town tab. There'll be information there. And, you know, otherwise they could always reach out to our 1-877-WISE-USE phone number and express interest, and we can direct them to the appropriate person.
And sort of similarly to the Energize in Action mobile exhibit, this is all just about sort of making it easier for people to be sustainable and conserve energy by bringing the services and the information and the education almost to their doorstep or to their school.
That's correct. The idea behind both these efforts was to try to utilize the energy and the interest that are located within each of these communities in trying to make sure that we're arming them with the information and the financial and technical resources necessary to make sure that they make their communities more energy efficient and more sustainable for the future.
So once again, if you're an educator or you're interested in finding out about the mobile exhibit, you go to energizect.com/energyinaction. And if you are a community leader or someone involved in energy conservation in your community and you're waiting to find out about possibly getting involved in round two of this community partnership initiative, then you just need to keep your eye on the energizect.com website under the Your Town tab for when that project will be launched. Ron Arujo has been our guest this morning. He is the Eversource Director of Energy Efficiency. Mitch Gross also on the line with us. We thank you both and wish you a great Independence Day weekend. Thank you, guys. Well, it's been a while since we talked to our friends at CCM, the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, and our prior interviews, we had the pleasure of talking with Executive Director Joe DeLong, but I recently received some outreach from CCM and was thrilled to make a new acquaintance there. My guest this morning, Richard Porth. Rick is the Special Projects Coordinator for the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. And the reason we are circling back with that agency today is because CCM felt Connecticut's towns and cities have a key role to play in the renewed efforts across the country to promote racial equity, as Joe DeLong himself put in introducing a brand new guidebook to help town and city leaders better respond to racial tensions in their communities. And Rick played a key role in compiling all of the information that has added up to this completed guide, which just got released over the past couple of weeks. So as we have been stepping up our effort to talk about DEI and racial and social equity and balance here on our program, we're pleased to engage in this conversation this morning. Rick, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate the chance to talk with you.
So just give us a little bit of your background and how this project landed on your desk.
Well, I've been working at CCM for about a year and a half now. And before that, I worked at United Way of Connecticut, where we operate the 211 service for about 12 years.
Sure.
The most relevant part of my background is that I started out in municipal government for about 13 years, give or take. And this is like coming full circle for me to be able to serve at CCM and to serve the cities and towns across the state. Grateful for the opportunity.
Where, what municipality were you affiliated with?
I started out in the city of Trenton, New Jersey, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad we have you here in Connecticut because you're doing some important work now with CCM, and all of Connecticut's towns and cities will be able to benefit from it, as will all of the folks who live in them. We appreciate that. So before we get into talking a little bit more about this guidebook, my understanding is that in part, the idea behind creating it springs from a Connecticut Conference of Municipalities initiative called CCM Cares in Action. Is that right?
That's right, John. And thank you for asking. This is a almost 2-year effort now on the part of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, and CARES stands for Communities Advancing Racial Equity Series. And it's our effort to provide sort of a guided process designed so that towns and cities all across Connecticut can implement action items that we believe can lead to the prospect, the opportunity to promote equity, racial equity in particular, in municipalities. And so the CARES in Action initiative includes training sessions, peer roundtables, technical assistance, all geared and designed to allow municipalities to move at their own pace in implementing some of the racial equity action items that we've identified.
Well, there was a huge push off the block as we began learning as a nation about the tragedy of George Floyd and so many others to initiate a big movement at the most local level. So CCM really was able to come off the block pretty quick with this project, wouldn't you say?
Yes. I think credit our board of directors, mayors, first selectmen, town managers, and our leaders at CCM, Joe DeLong and Ron Thomas, for starting early on this process of promoting equity and staying with it all along. You know, we believe at CCM that a lot of the discussion about equity-related issues takes place at the national level and at the state level, too. But if you think about it, local government and school districts really impact daily life in many different ways. Police and fire, schools, parks and playgrounds and recreation, the way towns do zoning, housing code enforcement, even public works like trash pickup and street maintenance and street lighting and economic development and so forth. So we believe at CCM that cities and towns can and do play an important role in the effort to promote equity.
Well, we know a lot of municipal leaders and workers and state representatives and others who are in leadership roles listen to the program, but we also have way, way more residents and citizens who listen to the programs. If you were to sort of shift or alter your focus a little bit to just direct a few comments to folks who live in the communities, what would be a couple of the things within the CCM Cares in Action program that might be of the greatest interest to the residents who will ultimately benefit and be able to enjoy a better quality of life and a better and more responsive and inclusive community thanks to this effort?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I'm learning too, John, as we do this work. Actually, I've talked to many national experts on these topics, and they've participated in some of the earlier Cares in Action sessions that we've had. And what I keep hearing over and over from people who do this nationally is a prerequisite for this kind of work is to build trust, to demonstrate real authenticity, to work hard at partnerships and collaboration with all parts of the community, and especially underrepresented parts of the community, and to be transparent as much as they possibly can in order to build that trust. That's the goal of a lot of this work, is to open up access to municipal services and access to municipal leaders, to encourage people from underrepresented parts of the community to run for local office or to seek appointed office, to try to make sure that everyone who lives in a city or town feels some ownership, some connection to their municipal government.
Yeah, I guess at the same time, Rick, when new incidents develop that cause tension in communities, community leaders naturally want to give every one of their citizens a voice. And unfortunately, in the heat of horrible situations, those voices can tend to get amped up, and the individuals voicing concerns can become agitated, understandably, even angry. And I imagine this is what led to you seeking the necessary resources to compile the guidebook that we'll talk about for the rest of our visit.
Exactly right, John. Exactly right. And here again, the goal and what we've learned from national experts, and there are two main pieces of the publication we're talking about today. One comes from the National League of Cities and is titled Responding to Racial Tension in Your City. And the second one comes from the U.S. Department of Justice's Community Relations Service, and it's a police critical incident checklist. And these are two of the best sources nationally for advice for local leaders, police leaders, and municipal leaders, mayors, and so forth, to try to address an event that could lead to heightened racial tension. And I'll just say this too, John. They both start by saying what I mentioned a minute or two ago. Don't wait for something to happen. Work right away, right now, on developing good, trusting relationships between City Hall or Town Hall and all parts of the community, and develop partnerships which are genuine, not just you know, that genuine in the sense that town hall, city hall really is listening to different groups and giving them some sense of engagement, of being part of that city or town. And that's crucial prerequisite for dealing with any type of event that might lead to tension in a community.
Well, that being said, it sounds like many different segments of the community and their leaders also could benefit by downloading and reading this book. I would imagine having everybody, not just community leaders and police officials and public safety agencies and their representatives, up to speed on the latest information out of CCM, but also at the same time having community leaders who in many respects are at the forefront of the group of voices calling for a change or protesting incidents that in so many cases, you know, the tragedy is shared by us here in Connecticut, but it hasn't happened here. What would you say are a couple of the best reasons why residents should also consider downloading it and picking up this guide?
Honestly, this was put together from the two sources I mentioned with the goal of being really concrete and really serious about helping municipal leaders and police leaders address issues that lead to heightened racial tension. And so anyone could read this document and see spelled out in real clear language what it takes to be as responsive and genuine and honest and transparent as possible when something happens in a community. And there's a, like everything, I worked in government a long time, and one thing I learned is that when things go well in a community, government gets too much credit. But when things go poorly, government gets too much blame. Like anything in a city or town, it requires a broad part of the community to be engaged in participating and hopefully pulling in the same direction for the benefit of the whole community. And that's what this advice in this publication is intended to try to demonstrate. Mm-hmm. It also shows a real serious commitment to a program or a response that's going to hopefully, I'll say, keep the family together, so to speak, after an event.
Mm. Across 169 cities and towns, each and every one of them has their own range of diversity among their residents. But certainly the diversity among those communities individually from a resource perspective could be quite different. How does this guidebook help address things that all communities can begin to do, regardless of their size of government and police force, or even in the municipalities that are so small here in Connecticut that they may only have a resident state trooper as their quote-unquote police department?
Right. Look, the focus of this publication is an event that could potentially lead to racial tension. But, for example, the Department of Justice's Community Relations Services focuses not only on that particular issue, but tensions that might arise out of, you know, many other considerations, like, anything in a community that could lead to tension, even things that aren't based on racial differences. Mm-hmm. So this is an effort. I would say that the advice given by the National League of Cities and the Department of Justice in this publication is good advice for anyone that cares about maintaining a good, strong community where people feel they belong and can be engaged in what's going on.
Well, before we say farewell to you for this visit, Richard, it's only been available to communities now for a couple of weeks. What kind of feedback are you and CCM getting from it in terms of, comments from municipal leaders? Are some communities already digging right into it and beginning to apply these checklists to their municipal agencies and police departments?
Well, we have gotten some good feedback, John, and we're grateful for that. And just to be clear, the source documents for our publication have been available publicly for a while. The National League of Cities put their guidelines out some time ago, and the same for the Department of Justice. But we wanted to package it and republish it, so to speak, in a way that could put it in front of as many municipal and police leaders as possible, and as you say, the public. I will say that there are some cities and towns in the state who are already doing really good work. The Stratford has a police engagement program, which is a model, I think, not only here in Connecticut, but others around the country are starting to take notice of it. The town of West Hartford has done some really good work lately on a police community trust and engagement action plan. And there are many others, too. I don't want to leave anyone out.
Sure.
But there are a lot of good leaders who are really trying to address this in a serious way. And so I think, so far we're gratified by the level of interest. We hope more towns will learn from it, but also from their neighbors around the state who have worked hard on some of these issues already.
Well, it's great that the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities has reacted so quickly to help provide this first ever guidebook to help towns and city leaders better respond to racial tension in their communities. It was part of CCM's Cares in Action initiative, and they are presenting these innovative and impactful best practices from experts across the country. The man who helped compile this guidebook, Richard Porth, has been our guest this morning from CCM. He's a special projects coordinator for that statewide agency. Richard, thank you. Thank you so much for your work on this, and we look forward to talking with you again. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.